Join leading executives from ITV, Channel 4, Sky, Marks & Spencer, Heineken, and many more for a dedicated day of networking and panels at the Telecast brand-funded Entertainment Summit at Advertising Week Europe on Thursday the 16th of May at 180 Studios in London. Panel discussions will explore how to work with UK broadcasters in brand-funded entertainment, navigating the world of compliance, IP and distribution, creator partnerships, the future of digital branded content, brand-funded podcasts, and more. Delegate tickets are available now via telecast.com/events at a very special discounted rate of £350 plus VAT, which also grants delegates access to more than 100 sessions at the event over all 3 days from the 14th to the 16th of May. Join company presidents and CEOs, founders, futurists, influencers, agencies, and execs from brands including Coca-Cola, TikTok, Google, Activision Blizzard, LinkedIn, Netflix, and Deliveroo. Plus, celebrities including Drive Tribe's Richard Hammond and pop legends Take That. Telecast brand-funded entertainment summit in association with 53 Degrees North Media at Advertising Week Europe on the 16th of May 2024. Get your tickets now at telecast.com/events and level up your knowledge and contacts in the world of brand-funded entertainment.
Telecast.
Hi, I'm Justin Crosby, and welcome to another Telecast. What are the opportunities for the content industry to work with Web3 platforms right now? What's been the impact of recent crypto fraud scandals? And how are Web3 viewers benefiting as well as platforms and producers? I'm looking to find out on this week's Telecast. My guest on this week's Telecast is Phil McKenzie, Chief Content Officer at Myco, the Web3 platform formerly known as M Content. Welcome to Telecast, Phil.
Thank you, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
Tell us a bit about your background, your career to date, and how you came to become Chief Content Officer at Myco.
Sure thing. Well, I started in the entertainment business anyway, nearly 10 years ago, when I joined Goldfinch as employee number 2, I think I was. So I joined Kirsty when I was on garden leave between 2 non-entertainment related jobs, where I used to work in sort of strategy and marketing for various companies. I ended up staying at Goldfinch instead of going off and taking the other job. Very proud of what we achieved in that business. We are achieving in that business to date, where I'm still involved. You know, Goldfinch is, for those that don't know, one of the leading indie investment and production companies in the UK. Very focused on film, but also, you know, a chunk of TV deals we've done and shows we've been involved in, and also a small sort of handful of video games. And also part of that business, we've, you know, invested money back into individuals or companies where we see something that we really like or get excited about, or see an opportunity in the market that maybe doesn't exist. That's kind of how, you know, I started to think about blockchain, Web3, probably a couple of years ago. Me and my wife were renovating a house, so I was listening to a lot of podcasts. And it was just at the time when everyone was starting to sort of think about NFTs and Web3 and the use cases. And, you know, every day when I'd turn up to the house and start whatever sort of menial task I was doing, painting or shifting stuff or whatever it was, I just get more and more sort of sucked into what the opportunity was there, and more sort of aligned on what was possible and how it could fix a lot of problems in the entertainment sector and also open up a lot of opportunity as well. And so I was thinking, how do we sort of take the fundamentals of Web3 and at least start to use them and trial them? And, you know, I started talking internally to people that we were working with within Goldfinch and businesses we were involved with. And one of those was Nick in First Flights, Nick Sadler, who's our partner in that business. And that's an incubator for first-time filmmakers, where we give some funding through the Short Film Fund and, you know, hope to, you know, see them create a great short film that will then be that first, you know, rung on the ladder for them to go on to great things. And we thought maybe we can use Web3 technology to help them raise money using NFTs and tokens as a way of bringing in extra funds to help them on their way. And that led to us launching something called FF3. We were one of the first companies to successfully raise, you know, using NFTs to fund a production called The Dead of Winter, which we're actually just in production on at the moment. And, you know, I ended up being, you know, sitting on a lot of panels and doing a lot of talks. In fact, one of them was yours. And in fact, the panel that I was speaking on at the Telecast Financing Forum with you guys was where I met Umair, who was the founder of Myco, previously known as M-Content. And I'd heard about M-Content before that, and I was very impressed by what the guys had built in a short space of time. One of the criticisms about Web3, sort of in joke, is that, you know, everybody, you know, talks a great game and loves chatting, you know, about their vision and all these amazing possibilities, but very few sort of get down to business and actually deliver. And what I was really blown away by was the fact that, you know, Mayor and the team had launched their token, raised a chunk of cash doing that. They'd build a community, you know, a big community off the back of that. And then they'd also, you know, put those funds into serious projects, into proper film and TV projects, and put them on a platform in probably 6 to 9 months. This was whilst a lot of other companies were just sort of, you know, talking about it. So we kept in touch and we were talking about different ways of working together. And what that materialized into was me coming on board as their chief content officer in a partnership agreement with Goldfinch to help on the production side and funding side where appropriate. And this was probably 6 months ago. We're now, yeah, in a really exciting place where we have just rebranded the platform, as you sort of indicated previously. We were called M-Content, we're now called Myco. We've completely redesigned, rebuilt the platform itself from the ground up. So the functionality, the UI, the UX is really industry leading. You know, we've acquired and licensed a lot of content. We've got, you know, the first initial originals coming through now as well and landing on the platform. And we're, yeah, now just looking to grow this throughout the rest of the year, bring in some, you know, some fantastic partners, some investors, and we think sort of sky's the limit if we keep on this trajectory.
Okay, well, that's good to know. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that you'd actually met at the yes. Telecast Content Funding Festival last year. So there we go. I should be popping in an invoice for that, surely, some sort of introduction fee.
I know, I'm going to look at the small print the next time we're involved in an event, but yeah, I'm sure there's going to be like an introductory, fee in there.
It was a really good day. And actually, you can go back, if anybody's interested, they can listen to that panel that Umair was on from the Content Funding Festival. So it's you can just find that easily in the back catalogue of Telecast episodes. And it was interesting because I think back then we were talking about, you know, what is blockchain and how can it help the production community? I remember the discussion. It was a lot of, you know, what is blockchain? What, you know, what is it? And I think, you know, we're nearly a year later and I think people's understanding has developed a little bit more. But I certainly think from being in Real Screen and being at recent industry events, the talk is all about alternative forms of financing becoming, you know, super important this year, co-production being super important, but also the way that producers are going to get their shows funded is changing because we're in the middle of a recession. We know that a lot of cable companies are dropping their budgets. There's all this turbulence that's going on. So essentially, the alternative form of financing via a Web3 model seems even more timely now than perhaps it was back then. First of all, why did you change the name? What was that all about?
There was just a feeling that we needed it to be shorter, snappier, more memorable, just a better brand, really, to put on the platform and our content going forward. And M-Content was, you know, kind of purely bubbled up out of very quick beginnings when Umair kind of quickly spun it up at the start. And we just felt like, the you know, we needed something more representative and also more appealing to our community and the Gen Z audience we're going after. So we took the M-Content idea and, you know, the whole idea around power to the viewer, them being involved and getting a share of the content and the ownership that goes with it. And so we took the idea of M Content to My Content to Myco, and that's a sort of quick story behind that.
So it's basically a more snappy consumer-facing brand, yeah. Essentially. Now you're going to start to go out and market this to consumers a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Coming back onto what you were saying there about, you know, this idea of audience having a share. For our audience that perhaps don't know anything about blockchain at all, and maybe haven't heard of Myco or M Content, let's start at the beginning. What's the purpose of the Myco Web3 platform?
So the whole purpose, the vision of it, is for us to put power back in the hands of the audience and the viewer. So there's many platforms out there. There's a lot of, you know, use cases in Web3 as well, where it's about putting that the power into the hands of the creator, or actually just putting more hands into the power of the platform as the middleman. There's not really anything out there, we believe, that is about empowering the viewer and rewarding them justly for their involvement in the value chain. Now, more than ever, you know, people are understanding the value of their data and their position within the digital economy. And as part of that, you know, what we do and what underpins it all is this revenue split across everything we do, where 65% goes to the rights holder and 35% goes to the audience. So what that means in a little bit more detail is, whatever revenue comes through the platform or comes through that piece of content, the 65-35 is the split that's made. And that split is then allocated in M Content tokens to the two parties. The tokens can be cashed out as normal currency, as pounds or dollars, or you can sit on them and, you know, and build up a pile of M Content tokens and then use them, you know, for other experiences and unlocking more content or potentially other retail opportunities that we're just building out and putting on the platform too. And a really good sort of proof of concept of this that we recently did just before Christmas was we took a live sporting event. We acquired the live streaming rights to the India-Bangladesh cricket series in December. And, you know, of course, normally people would pay, you know, up to $10 to watch this series in a sort of traditional pay-per-view manner. But in this case, we bagged, you know, advertising revenue from, I believe it was 10 different brands and sponsors. We totaled that up and we allocated 35% of that revenue back to the viewers. So rather than these guys and girls all paying their $10, in fact, they were paid for the privilege of coming to Myco and watching the cricket series with us. And I think that's the best sort of proof of concept that we can point to, which really shows us flipping the model on the head and doing something innovative and different and exciting that puts the power back in the hands of the viewer.
So essentially the problem you're trying to solve with Myco then, is it about attracting viewers to content, or is it about changing the funding and advertising model? What do you see as being the problem with the current, you know, whether it be linear or streaming system or AVOD that you're trying to solve?
It's that none of the platforms and providers out there of content are thinking about how do we reward the audience in their involvement in watching this piece of content. It's all about how can they, you know, look after their stakeholders, the advertisers, the content creators. No one is actively thinking, how can I give something back to the audience and reward them and cut them into this transaction? We've seen the rise of play to earn in games, you know, that's taken off over the last few years. And that's largely, you know, due to the younger demographic, the Gen Z and millennials, you know, really embracing this as well, not just as a game, but as an experience and as a format to engage with content as well. On the more content side as well, we've seen the rise of AVOD services. You know, these guys are, you know, have deep war chests as well that they're putting into original content. So I don't think it's going to be long until, you know, the audience see a good quality of production that they would have previously seen on SVOD services that are paying for. The audience will see that actually I don't need to pay for this anymore. And I think it's a short step on from that to think actually, you know, I can be rewarded for this and I should be getting a share of, you know, more meaningful involvement and engagement in this content for watching it, you know, akin to the watch, to the play to earn model, sorry, out of the games industry. You know, I think it's a mix of all those factors that, you know, will point towards people being driven to services like ours and similar ones that are, you know, audience centric and thinking about how can we bring different experiences that they're not getting at the moment and different reward structures that the audience aren't getting at the moment. And as you kind of rightly pointed out, we're just in a recession with whatever data you look at, you know, budgets are being cut, you know, people are more mindful of the money they've got, but they still want just as good, if not better experiences. So, you know, now is the time we feel that we should be, you know, really being laser focused on, yeah, how can we do this in a different way, in a more and a better way for the viewer.
Is there any advertising? Does the viewer also sit through advertising during a show, or is it ad free?
Yeah, there's the usual kind of ad breaks in there, you know, before and after and intermittent stages throughout. It's a relatively standard sort of AVOD approach. We're also bringing in SVOD probably by the end of Q1, so March. From a user perspective, the interaction and how they're being served the ads and the subscription element will be relatively, you know, similar to what they get. But what will change is the reward structure and how they're being, you know, rewarded for engaging with the content and watching the content in a more meaningful manner.
You're being rewarded not to skip the ads, essentially.
Yeah, so the quality of the viewer is so much higher with the platform, with MyCo, than it would be with many other sort of streaming options, because these people are being, yeah, rewarded for watching every single second of what is happening there in front of them. Yeah, they're not skipping, they're not, yeah, just jumping to the bits they like, you know, they're watching, you know, every second, you know, as it ticks on.
Blockchain and crypto has come in for a bit of stick recently, hasn't it? It's got a bit of a bad name through people like Sam Bankman-Fried and the founder of FTX, who's currently facing fraud charges in America. How does that affect what you're doing in terms of reputationally for crypto-based and blockchain-based businesses? Where do things go from here, do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question and one that, yeah, unfortunately, we have to answer. You know, from people within the industry, you know, what SBF and FTX were doing was very different to what, you know, 90% of the use cases of Web3 and businesses that are building using it are actually doing. He is, in essence, you know, a bad actor. He was acting fraudulently and using tech to defraud people. There's an argument there if he could have used Web3, he could have used more traditional technology as well. There was an element of it was always going to happen, but just technology enabled him to do it. Now, what we shouldn't be doing is kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And I think a lot of people recognize that or are starting to recognize that. You know, a few bad actors that have embraced this and run with it and, you know, taken advantage of people who were trying to jump on a bandwagon as sort of retail investors and those that kind of had FOMO and wanted to make, you know, get rich quick off it. That shouldn't lead to us, you know, discounting all these amazing use cases and businesses that are starting to pop up and really using the tech to create new experiences, create new opportunities, and ultimately, you know, build real communities and decentralize a lot of the structures and systems that exist in society today, you know, for the better, we feel. And personally to us, from a micro, you know, yes, you know, this is a question we always have to kind of battle and answer. But actually what we feel is that there was always going to come a stage where the sort of bubble popped and a lot of the hot air went out of what was, you know, a very buoyant, frothy market in tech in general. And Web3 was maybe at the tip of that. And there was always going to be a case of things getting kind of, you know, businesses that were playing right close to the edge were going to be swept away, leaving what we feel are the sort of proper, stable, long-term, good businesses for the future, such as MyCo, that hopefully investors can get behind, as well as, you know, consumers and the rest. And I'd say we're starting to see a lot of the sort of mass adoption of the technology come through with big, big brands launching their campaigns using NFTs, you know, the metaverse, etc. They're not going to all get it right, but they're starting to use it and play around with it and see how can they use it to better engage with their fans, their audiences and consumers. So we're pretty bullish. We're bullish that there's not as many companies around in the space. You know, we're one of them that is a serious, you know, long-term contender. And we're bullish that, you know, there's going to be mass adoption using the technology across not just entertainment, but all elements and sectors of society as both companies and people get to grips with the potential of the technology.
The whole concept of decentralization is something that you don't want that the whole idea and the benefits of decentralization to be tarred with the brush of a couple of fraudsters. So I understand that. So tell us about Myco then in terms of how robust you are as a business, because you're going out there, you're acquiring catalog, you're commissioning content. We'll talk about that in a second, but can you give everybody an idea of, you know, how solid and robust Myco is as a business?
Yeah, I mean, we've been going for just over 12 months and seen a huge amount of growth in that time. You know, we're close to 1.5 million users, you know, closing in on, you know, 1,000 watch hours on the platform. We've got about 50 originals at various stages of production as well now. A lot of that has been, you know, we've been able to do that, especially through the dip, through, you know, the support of our, you know, anchor investor as well, you know, who's been, you know, not just supportive from a cash point of view, but from a strategic and a resource point of view as well. You know, we're generating revenues. And we, you know, are generating, you know, a lot of interest, you know, on the investor side as well, which is, you know, one of our aims in the first half of this year is launching and closing our Series A funding round, which we're excited about too. So, you know, we're also talking a lot of strategic partners, a lot of bigger companies in terms of, you know, traditional TV companies and, you know, mini studios, distributor sales, you know, pretty much from every sector of the entertainment business, who are interested about how can they work with us and use us as a way of understanding Web3 better, how can they understand this new distribution avenue better and start to, yeah, work with us in some way, shape or form. Some of that can be quite transactional and some more kind of far-reaching and strategic in some cases. You know, as far as where we're positioned, you know, we're perfectly placed, you know, as a platform, but also as a production company, financier, to, yeah, just help navigate this new world of distribution and Web3, you know, and trying to harness it in those ways to finance, to produce, to distribute content in a new and more exciting manner. A lot of the opportunities coming to us are just trying to work out how can we use the tech alongside traditional ways to create better experiences and rewards for our audience.
Let's talk about commissioning for a second and the original content you're commissioning. Can you give us a flavor of this? Because what I've seen in the news in the past year or so with M Content, when it was M Content, was that a lot of the original commissioned shows were shows at documentaries actually around blockchain and, you know, the whole crypto sector. Is that purely because a lot of your early audience are just that, early adopters, and they're going to find the actual, that sort of, you know, watching blockchain documentaries on a Web3 platform makes complete sense to them, and they're already sort of converted, if you like, into this way of experiencing content. Is that still the case now, or are you looking to branch out? You mentioned the cricket rights that you acquired. Give us an idea of what you're looking for and what original content you've commissioned to date.
Today, yeah, I think we've definitely sort of lent into that Web3 community that we've got. Yeah, the Blockchain Live series, which you mentioned, Web3 Wonderland, which we did with Villain Studios, or we're doing, sorry, currently with Villain Studios. But I think our ambition and our pipeline actually is far broader than that. The best way we can describe it is just say, the best focus for us is around Gen Z and what they want and what they're consuming, which is obviously ever evolving. You know, whether that's documentaries, yes, Web3, great, but also true crime that we're looking at, you know, anything that's kind of cultural, biopic based as well. You know, but again, it's got to be Gen Z orientated. It's got to be stuff that they engage with, that they actually know that happened and remembered and they feel is relevant to them today. On the format side, there's some lifestyle back then stuff we're doing and developing, particularly with older stuff maybe that we're pulling into a more kind of techie format now, or, you know, a sort of futuristic lean to it. One of those that we announced was the Dating in the Metaverse that we announced very recently, which is a dating show, you know, built around, you know, in a metaverse, obviously. And on the scripted side, we're sort of taking it a bit slower and, you know, clearly, you know, budgets, you know, far greater on that side. So we are, you know, trying to go after maybe more genre, high concept, whether that's thrillers, more sci-fi or horror related stuff that we can shoot for, you know, lower, more sensible budgets and be less reliant on cast. And then also looking at, you know, as you said, sports rights. You know, podcasts for us, you know, is an area we're excited about too. You know, short form content, you know, the format doesn't really matter for us. It doesn't matter whether it's 5-minute clips or, you know, multi-episode series or, you know, feature film or whatever. It can be any shape or size, as long as we feel that it's got that steer towards Gen Z and it's something exciting and interesting for them. So across all of that, we've got, as I sort of said earlier, we've got a slate and a pipeline of stuff we're either acquiring or licensing or commissioning or even producing in-house with the team we've put together, you know, across all those sort of areas and genres. You know, we're very busy on the content side.
And are you transacting with producers and distributors in terms of acquiring and commissioning content in a traditional way when it's, you know, sort of pounds and dollars? Or are you looking for your partners to look at this as an investment when it comes to earning tokens? How should, you know, potential partners be thinking about how they can work with you?
What we always say is we're in the market to act like a traditional content company. We're there to acquire and license like any other buyer would, any other network would or platform would, to commission this similarly and to produce. The deals that we're doing are, you know, we'll pay a license fee, an acquisition fee, and that will be in fiat. It will be in, you know, in pounds and dollars or euros. We can always then give a revenue share and a profit split, you know, using the tokens, which, you know, depending on whoever the producer is or rights holder is, we can work out the sort of nuances of the deal, whether they keep the tokens or we convert them for them. So we're there to act as a traditional content company, as I said. The tokens and all that, you know, clever stuff is almost like a, you know, the sort of cherry on top and added bit we can give extra. So yeah, we're there to act as a traditional, you know, content company.
All right. And how about your viewers, / subscribers, / audience out there? First of all, how do you access Myco? How can our listeners to Telecast go and have a look and discover Myco? What's the easiest way for them to do that?
You can download it from the App Store. You can go to the website as well, which is myco.io. And yeah, super simple to sign up. And yeah, start watching and earning the tokens. For every second that you're consuming content, you'll be earning tokens.
And where geographically are the most of Myco's viewers right now? Because the company's based in the Middle East, isn't it?
Yeah, the company is based in Dubai. We have, you know, a good chunk of our subscribers and audience in the Middle East, in sort of MENA, in South Asia as well. But we also have a surprising amount in America and Canada, and also, you know, Europe too. So it's relatively global, the audience, with a slight lean into the region, as it described, but also North America, which is surprising for us, you know, but kind of, you know, we're running with it. And, you know, we've just come back from the US from a couple of weeks there doing meetings, because we feel like actually that, you know, going off the data, there's an appetite for what we're doing there, and we should be working out how to pull in more partners over the pond and maybe accelerate that growth path over there. So, and that kind of feeds into the content that's part of our pipeline. It's a mix of, yes, regional stuff, but also international stuff as well, which is a tricky balance to tread, you know, fully recognize that. I think we're getting it right at the moment. You know, that's the job of a modern platform, I think, is to try and work out, you know, how to tread that line.
And what's next then, Phil? What's next for Myco in the first quarter or so of 2023? What are your main priorities? What do you want to achieve with Myco in the next few months?
Our priority is on the content side. We've got a whole slew of podcasts we're launching. We're going to, you know, win talks to acquire another handful of sporting events, which we'll go live with. We will have some more, you know, announcements on some scripted projects we've been putting together. We announced the FTX doc that we're doing with Decrypt as well, which is, you know, something we're really passionate about in telling that story. Keep your eyes peeled and on the platform, because, you know, we've got a sort of very aggressive release campaign around, you know, the number of new projects we want to be announcing and marketing and launching on the platform, you know, every week. So that's our job, is to make sure there's enough exciting content on there and new content and exclusive content that draws people in. You know, separate to this is, you know, we're, as I mentioned, you know, in the sort of early stages of launching our Series A funding round, which we're very bullish about completing given, you know, the reception we've had so far within the next few months. Just continuing to build the business and keeping the growth trajectory where it is, which is, you know, in a really exciting place, and building the team out further on the ground in Dubai and in some other locations as well very, very quickly.
Now it's time in the show for Story of the Week, where my guests get to nominate the news story that's caught their eye in the past 7 days. Phil, what's your Story of the Week?
Story doing the rounds about Andrea Riseborough, the British actress in a film called To Leslie. And there's a lot of kind of furore going on about the way in which, you know, people have been marketing the film to the, you know, around the Oscars and the support it's being given. It just made me think in general. I know this is sort of more film than TV, but it's applicable across both areas. And it's made me think, you know, what is the relevance of these awards now? And how much money is spent on them, not just to televise them and the sort of production around it, but the marketing campaigns that go around each of the projects and the talent involved in order to win them. You know, is that money, is that time and effort not better spent on more productive things, on more meaningful things within the industry, especially with budgets being tightened and us, you know, facing a tricky year ahead? And sort of second to that, also thinking, you know, Gen Z, the younger generation coming through, which Myco is, you know, focused on serving. You know, the films that are in these awards, the TV shows that are in there, are any of them representative of this younger, you know, demographic coming through? And in general, are they representative of just the general audience out there? And I think in a lot of cases that they're probably not. So whilst quite a niche story, maybe, I think it sort of symbolizes a bigger problem that we have. And yes, you know, everyone loves to get an award and praise and a pat on the back, but maybe we just need to rethink them going forward and the importance that we hold on them or we place on them.
You mentioned earlier on the show you've been to LA recently. I'm imagining that all you've been able to see, all the billboards, are For Your Consideration billboards, which are focused on a handful of people in Beverly Hills or West Hollywood to get their votes. But these studios, you know, Netflix as well as, you know, a lot of the traditional studios, are spending millions to get their shows nominated and obviously ultimately winning these awards. It is extraordinary. Whenever I've been into LA and seen that, it's like, well, you know, isn't there a better way of doing that? Is there more targeted way of influencing people? But there we are. That's
and a wider pool of people voting on them and contributing. You know, the Academy and all the other awards as well, you know, is still a very elite group of industry insiders who make the calls, and still grappling with issues of representation and equality and all the things that are, you know, a lot of other sectors have kind of got on top of or have been working through, and it seems that we haven't still. So yeah, that's my story.
Interesting. No, it's interesting. Well, Ricky Gervais's tirade at the Golden Globes a few years ago still lives quite fresh in the mind, doesn't it, when we're talking about the whole Oscars and award-winning circuit. And now it's time for another one of our regular slots, where my guests get to shout out their hero of the week and nominate who or what they're telling to get in the bin. So, Phil, first of all, who's your hero of the week?
It's the Succession trailer dropping, which I'm sure a lot of people are very excited about. Yeah, I just think, you know, does it get any better than this? It's just, you know, the most incredible TV show that, you know, I've literally been counting down the days for. So, yeah, that's my hero.
26th of March, isn't it, Phil? Yeah. I think it's 26th of March.
Too far away. It's too far away in my book.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we're all looking forward to the next installment in the life of Logan Roy and his kids. So Succession is your hero of the week. And what about in the bin? What or who are you telling to get in the bin?
Yeah, I know Succession is probably a bit of a sort of flippant one, but my in the bin, I actually had two, one of which we spoke about, which was FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried, which is, you know, he firmly deserves to go in the bin for tarring, you know, an entire industry and, you know, ruining people's savings. But the second sort of serious one I had for this was, and I've thought this for a while and spoken about it on various panels and things, but it's really come into focus the last sort of month or so when we've been out there, you know, starting to fundraise for MyCo for the Series A. And it's this idea that in the UK, I just don't think we've got it right still with, you know, the investment structures and the investment environment for entertainment companies. When we're thinking, where do we raise money from? We talk about the US, we talk about the Middle East, you know, maybe pockets in Asia. No one really talks about the UK. And I think, you know, the government, you know, should be doing something about this. We had, you know, SEIS, EIS structures, you know, they got altered and are, you know, very tricky and very bureaucratic to use. And I feel we've got an opportunity, you know, in a weird way, with budgets being cut, people spinning out of bigger companies. We've got such a great talent pool in the UK, you know, world renowned and respected. But are, you know, when these people are spinning out of these bigger companies and looking to do their own thing, are they getting the support and the funding, more importantly, that they need? And I think in a lot of cases, having been at the sharp end of that, I'd say no, they're not. I don't know whether it goes in the bin, but it needs addressing. And I think it needs to be, you know, addressed as a priority in order to make sure that, you know, we're not just servicing other productions and US productions here, but we're actually, you know, continuing to build a fantastic domestic industry that has, you know, long-term value for the people that are actually involved in it.
Well, I think everybody could agree with that. Certainly our listeners in the UK will agree with that, I'm sure. Phil, thank you so much for coming on Telecast. Really interesting hearing about MyCo and your plans and how things are going. If you're going to be doing any more cricket events, any rights, well, you know, I'm a big cricket fan, so I'll be hoping for an invitation to Lords or something in the post.
Hopefully it's one of the Lords tests for sure, and we can get you on commentating it, maybe just to
love or, to. Yeah. I'm always available.
In exchange for the introduction between me and Mara, you can.
There we are. Yeah, we could call that quits.
Exactly.
All right. Good luck with everything, and we'll hopefully see you at the next Telecast Content Funding Festival, which is happening in May. So we'll see you very soon, and good luck.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
Well, that's about it for this week's show. Next week, I'm meeting with one of the UK's most successful content creators, with over 8 million followers across social platforms, the 23-year-old viral superstar, Brandon B. This week's show was recorded in London and edited by Ian Chambers. Until next week, stay safe.